This is Y-Tune Shuffle.
Y-Tune Shuffle, it's the music that informs our lives.
The rules here are that there are no rules other than just bring in your music, hit play.
We get to pick your brain about why those songs. But you'll have to serve
somebody. Who is your best friend on this album? We got this album.
Mark Pachenik. We've been best friends since first grade. Okay. And we were still best friends, but it was kind of ending. Actually, he loved the Dead. Okay. And he got really into weed, actually. And I got into girls.
Welcome to Y-Tune Shuffle, a celebration of the music that inspires our lives. With your hosts, comedian and radio personality Maggie Mayfield, and Hollywood's secret weapon, David Earl Waterman. This is Y-Tune Shuffle.
I mean, if you want to talk about the underbelly of comedy.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the underbelly of comedy. Would that be something you want to talk about?
Yeah,
in
our that's
intro?
Fine. I won't mention names because it's not a pleasant story. But last night I played at a room, kind of a big room here in the LA area.
Okay.
And one of the producers I had met doing a show. It was just kind of an indie show. A friend of mine was like, "Hey, be on the show," and I know what I look like. You know, like I know how I come off and how I present myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, for the first time in my life, I can say, like, I'm a good-looking person, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a way that's, like, very...
You're aware of yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I flaunt it.
No.
And I don't, you know, I'm just a happy person.
Got it.
I think that energy just comes from the inside out, and that makes you a more attractive human being.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very aware of the kind of people that I attract. And this man met me at this show, missed my set completely, but told me that he is a promoter. He's a producer of shows and he wanted me to be on one of his shows. And I told him, I was like, well, I don't really do bringer shows. It's not my thing. Like it's hard for me to get people to come out because I've been here for so long now. And I just don't have friends that are like willing to pay $10, $15 a show.
Mm-hmm.
To come to this. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. So he hit me up and said, will you do this show? This was last night. And I was like, okay, but like, I can't get people to come out. He's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Again, he's never seen my stand-up, never seen me perform. And it occurred to me that this man hired me based on what I look like. And it was a weird thought. And I was like, I know that I'm funny and I'm going to have a great time at the show. And I really wanted to do it because they taped the sets and
mm-hmm.
I wanted a professional looking recording. I went up, he saw my stuff and he was like, oh, I didn't realize you were that funny. And there were some, there were other people there, but it didn't stop there. It was like, I came in with a friend of mine who just moved here from Illinois. My
mm-hmm.
roommate came as well. And as soon as my friend walked into the room, he goes, is that your boyfriend?
Wow.
I just looked at him like, does it matter? Who cares? Don't. Just stop. And then he would hug me and then his hand would creep lower into my hip. I was like, this is not, I'm not comfortable. But he's, again, twice my size. And I was just like, what am I going to do?
That's kind of...
So it was really awkward, you know, and I think it definitely took away from stage time because I felt anxious and I felt like I was being watched, and it was just like, and watched not in a good way, you know, before, as I'm doing that pre, let's get ready to do some stand up. So that's kind of the underbelly of comedy that women, I think, deal with more than we like to talk about.
Yeah. And it's complicated. I
mm-hmm.
mean, there are so many levels of like, I was just kidding, or can I be myself? And you know, this
mm-hmm.
is, what's a joke? And I can imagine it can be a minefield.
Yeah. But I went up and I had fun, and man, it was the first time I think I'd gotten hired based on what I look like.
Hmm. And knowing it, there's no denying it. It's
yeah.
like, okay, so I'm your eye candy and this is what's going to get me in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even though that feels that might feel bad, I mean, I don't know quite. You wouldn't be inclined to say, hey, listen, I want to stop this right now because I have a sense that you not knowing my act, you're.
I should have.
Do you think so?
I should have because I know what I bring to the table. Like, I know that I'm funny. My jokes are funny. Obviously, I run a room
right.
myself and I can keep a crowd going. Like, I know what I bring to the table. And it's more than...
Well, it's so complex because what if you were like visibly like bizarre looking? What if you like had weird glasses that were broken and taped in the middle
mm-hmm.
and you wore like mixed and matched clothes and maybe you had a different persona altogether and you look... And I admire the way that you put yourself... I mean, you're attractive to me and it's a reality. You've got, you know, an attraction to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's just where it is. Other people are attractive in different ways.
Exactly.
You know, for instance, like I'm thinking if you were a person who just like the woman who played the secretary on the Drew Carey show, the TV series, I can't remember her
Mimi.
Name. Mimi.
Yeah.
You know, and she were to sashay into a comedy club or meet the same person and they were like, never saw her act, but like, you look funny. I'm going to put you on stage.
Yeah.
Would not be an issue. Or would it? I mean,
I don't know if that happened.
I bring this up because I go on Tinder a lot just mm-hmm. to meet people.
Yeah.
And had a conversation with a woman, political conversation. And she said, I'm Mexican, but I'm red-blooded American. And I was like, well, you know, I'm white. And frankly, I'm not really super jazzed about being a white man in this day and age. And we got into this really, like where she was coming from a position in which, yeah, I don't like affirmative action and I'm against immigration and illegal aliens. And I totally don't support Trump, but I'm not hating on the guy. It's like, it was very interesting. And I was, you know, it's Tinder. So I'm looking to maybe have sex with this person, you know, whatever. And I'm trying to stay engaged. And the takeaway for me, I think there's a connection here to what you went through. It's like, it's not a cut and dry answer. There's so many mm-hmm. complexities and it's almost an, you know, whether you're being booked on a show because you're very attractive to this person and that's kind of definitely weird in a way. And you could definitely see you saying like, nah, why don't you look at my act first and then tell me what you like about my act and then I'll do your show.
Yeah.
I could totally see that. But at the same time, there's all these different nuances. You deserve to be on stage. You should be on stage. And how you get on stage, it's like, well, that's how you got on that night.
Yeah.
And am I right or wrong? And it's the same thing with this political conversation. It's just like, I don't see things the way she sees it. I'm a different person, different culture. But it's so I'm not going to end this conversation. I'm not going to not continue to – I'm going to meet her for a drink.
Good.
I'm not going to not stop that because I'm really hyper aware this week of how complex – and how many working parts go into this consciousness we're having, this life.
Yeah.
You can't just be like I am on Facebook. That sucks. I'm against it. You know, there's so much going on.
We have to bring that into the real space.
Heavy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I hear a lot of male comics talk about how unfair it is that all these girls just get booked on these shows because they got nice boobs. It's like, I'm not sure that I really ever met many of those women. And I was like, oh, I was that girl last night. And it felt not great.
I'm reticent to say this because she's a friend of mine, a close personal friend, but I admired Sarah Silverman so much. She is a gorgeous woman who did magazine spreads, you know, because of her, you know, universal beauty.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something, and you have it too, like Sarah was all business. Like she mm-hmm. knew that what her career was going to be. And I see a lot of that in yourself.
Thank
and
you, yeah.
There's a business practice to it mm-hmm. as well, I guess. I don't know. Jeez.
Well.
Jeez.
America today.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Whoa. Crazy.
David Earl Waterman, we mm-hmm. had quite an experience yesterday morning.
We did have a great, that was so much fun.
Oh my God. Your friend Sam Cedar invited us to be on his very successful podcast called The Majority Report.
That was our very first sort of like being a guest on someone else's show.
To talk about this awesome show.
It's such a great thing because Sam represents the beginning of my career.
Yeah.
And we were able to kind of delve into that. And you're quite a ways along, but you're still kind of fresh and new and your career is starting. And
it was so fun. I know you kind of felt bad about it afterwards, but it was really fun to hear you two kind of walk down memory lane.
Good.
And relive that apartment, the four bedroom weird balcony thing, you know, kind of put some pieces together for me. And so it was fun to walk down that road with you.
Well, the lifestyle that you're living now, the web series that you do about the apartment you live in,
uh-huh.
if that were available, we could have been doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Like to see in your experience, like, oh my gosh, I've been there and it's fun. It
Which is
fun.
My 250 square foot life, by the way.
Your 250 square foot life. I mean, that's, I get it. I get it. Yeah. So we were on and that was great fun.
Yeah.
And so appreciated that.
And I'll make sure that the link is posted on our Facebook page.
And will that link be able to allow
to the episode that we were on?
Oh, so we'll be able, I want to hear it.
Yeah, I do too.
That's cool.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, our guest today, unless you have anything else you want to check in.
No, I want to get to this guest.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is, I would say, a much closer friend to me now. When I met him, I thought he hated me.
Wow.
But he was all business, very successful comedian, producer, former current musician, mm-hmm. Billy Betts.
And what was great for me is he's from upstate New York. There's always a connection that I make just by virtue of that experience. And I was glad that he was able to connect. And pretty impressive five songs. Great first concert. So, Billy Betts. Anyway, that's it for me. Have a great day, you guys.
Bye.
Have a great show.
Happy April Fool's Day.
Woo! That's right!
I know. Any
jokes?
Oh my God,
it is April Fool's.
No,
you did this on purpose, didn't you?
Yes. We wanted the funniest.
What's going on?
We wanted the funniest comedian on April Fool's Day.
No, I have a feeling there's a camera around here somewhere and something's going to happen.
Billy Betts, this is no fooling. You're a great get.
I'm a great get.
Yeah, you're the real deal, man.
I wish the women out there would say that.
Aww.
But that's part of it. That's
I wish they would say that.
That's the struggle, man.
Billy Betts is quite an amazing person.
Yeah.
He has a pull all over the country. A friend of mine from Illinois, actually whom you met, Charlie Hester, came and did Billy's show and met through the internet. And so he's not only a talented comedian, but also a producer.
She's hitting on me.
Yeah, we're like both hitting
sure,
on you.
Yeah.
You just don't realize that.
Oh, I like this show.
How did you and Maggie Mayfield meet Billy Betts?
Plenty of Fish.
No, really? Bang, zoom, it's April Fool's.
I'm much higher class. It's Bumble. So.
There you go.
It's jade8.com. And I'm Italian.
Wonderful.
No, Billy was putting together a competition series for a while back.
Yeah.
And I was kind of fresh here in LA. And I was like, I'm going to do all the competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up inviting a friend. And he wound up winning that night. And I didn't even play. So I was so pissed.
It's like
and actually, what's funny is I told Billy later, I was like, I really thought that you hated me. Like, I don't know what you're doing. I really thought you hated me.
And I had nothing to do with the judging.
No, but he was kind of, you were producing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. You weren't hosting it.
Well, you said I was standoffish, but it's like I was in work mode while show was going on.
That's fine.
What is that show like? Is it still going on?
Every Wednesday night, it's not a competition every week, but I do the Van Nuys Comedy Club at the Springbok in Van Nuys.
That's cool.
And I turned the Springbok into a full-on comedy club. I booked professional comics, and it's a fun time.
And he does this really cool marketing thing, too. So before you even get to the show, he does these videos as well where they're like, check who else is coming out, and here's the website. And
personal
it's,
flyers
yeah, it's
and
really,
stuff,
really,
yeah.
really well put together.
Is that like an internet-based? I've heard about Conrad Romo was telling me he does this spoken word show.
Oh, no, this is a live show. Like, people go to the venue to watch.
It's a club-like thing?
It's a club-like thing.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Busy. Yeah. And then you do karaoke shows on Friday
karaoke,
and Saturday?
Karaoke. I book myself out.
If you're not doing stand-up.
Yeah, and then once my voice heals, I just had a surgery. I'm trying to put together a new project with a band, and
that's
all
right.
Over the
You're
place.
Also a musician.
I am. I started out as a drummer.
Really? Yeah. How long ago? As a kid?
In middle school through high school, I was in a band, and we opened up for Rob Zombie, Gwar, Smash Mouth.
And you were born and raised in upstate New York?
Upstate New York. I was born in Kingston, New York, moved to Albany, New York as soon as I was born. I lived all around upstate New York.
That we have a connection because I'm born and raised in Ithaca. I got a house in Syracuse.
Should we get coffee later?
Well, we should and just talk about all the success. Like, there's something in upstate New York. Like, SpongeBob SquarePants is Tom Kenny. He's from Syracuse.
And who was the tall guy from the tall bad guy from Home Alone?
That guy?
Daniel.
The really goofy guy.
Daniel.
Yeah.
What the heck is his name?
We can fix it in post.
Oh, man.
He's from upstate New York?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's from the Catskills area.
Yeah, and Richard Gere.
That doesn't even sound like a place.
Catskills?
It sounds like a gym or like a competition that you would bring your cat to.
Now I know we're in the wrong generation because every big act used to play the Catskills.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It used to be.
It's a huge venue there.
Filled with resorts and stuff. Catskill Game Farm was open, the Ponderosa
Catskill
Ranch.
Game Farm. Yep.
Yeah, it was like all theme parks. Now it's all trailers and meth.
It's no more? It's like really kind of died completely?
Yeah, everything's dead. Yeah. Everything's dead. All the resorts have turned into Section 8, you know, apartments and yeah.
Hmm.
I just want to do a callback. It's Daniel Stern.
There you go.
Daniel Stern.
Boom.
Okay.
Google is amazing.
I couldn't not know. It was going to kill me.
Interesting. And then that's where you grew up in upstate New York. And how'd you get into comedy? Like, when did that turn happen?
Well, I used to play for bands. And then when our band broke up, because the guy had such an original voice, the lead singer, he broke off for a while. And then I just dabbled in a comedy. It was a birthday at a place called Mother Earth's Cafe in Albany, New York. It's no longer around. But they had an open mic night, and I think it was like my 18th or something like that. And it was a vegan cafe, and someone said, you should sign up. And I got up there and just kind of got the bug. You know, mm-hmm. I bombed because I didn't have any experience, no jokes written. It was just kind of on a whim. Mm-hmm. And I got the bug and kept on messing around with it. And in 2002, moved out here to California and pursued it full time.
And that's what you're doing.
That's what I'm doing. Man. And then also running karaoke.
That's great.
Living the dream.
Well, why not?
Right here on Y-Tunes.
Shuffle, baby.
Yes.
Yeah, that you've really hit the big time now.
I have.
And that's what this is about, too, Billy Batts. It's like there's music that has been part of this journey for you. And you brought along five jammy jams.
I have.
Five musical selections.
Actually, music is a big part of my life. People see Wonderful. Comedians and stuff, but they don't realize, like, music is the soundtrack to your life. So I'm a hardcore rock person, but you're going to notice that this music goes everywhere.
Cool.
All right. Yeah. Shall we dig into number one?
Let's dig in number one.
Billy Batts, number one, Y-Tune Shuffle.
Yes.
I don't even know what it is. I love this part. Ooh, get it, man.
Yeah.
We've heard this.
Oh, yeah. 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 I just... Mm-hmm. These are instructional songs.
They are.
This is, no.
This song's amazing. Remember?
Totally amazing.
Lisa Left Eye used to have the condom over her left eye. That was her original patch.
That was a condom?
I didn't know that.
That was a condom, yeah.
Good information.
This, yeah, if you look at the music video, she's wearing condoms. That's still in the
wait,
package and everything.
Wait, this isn't TLC?
This is Salt and Pepper,
I
right.
I was like, wait a minute.
Did we? I made that same mistake the first time this song came up
I
on
think
Y-Tune
so,
Shuffle.
Yeah. I think so,
it's
also.
A very common mix-up.
I just put it out there how white I am, okay? That's what I did.
But
just, so what?
It's still valid and good information, but yeah. Salt and Pepper's here.
Well, that's
what
fine.
They
were like yeah. a one-hit wonder
I did the
anyway.
Same thing. I went to TLC, and it was, I can't remember who it was.
Shanali had it.
That's right. That's right, yeah. Another
so, guest. Why? What's up with why okay. this song? Where were you?
So this is a song that I lost my virginity to.
God, well done.
Yes. This is the one, and I figure I'd bring this story on radio because it's kind of funny. I grew up in foster homes and group homes. That's right. In the system.
System
so,
guy.
Yeah. So I was in a group home, MTV era, and this music video had come out. And this is going to sound really wrong. There's a lot of things that we all do in our life that you regret.
Well, yeah.
So, and you look back and you go, I did that, but it helps make you the person you are, and this is one of the things I look back and I'll never do again. But
you'll never lose your virginity again.
Right,
got it.
Right.
Guaranteed.
So there was so I'm watching MTV. I snuck it on because the group homes wouldn't allow you to watch it because apparently music videos were bad. So there's a slower girl sitting next to me, and I was like, hey, you want to try to do what they're talking about? And she goes, yeah. So we snuck in the bathroom, and that's how I lost my virginity.
Boy, the staff were really on point that day.
Weren't they?
You know, the 15-minute head checks were kind of like, where's the staff?
They're in well, you know, it was my first time, so 15 minutes is a long time.
Well,
your first time, you're the two-pump chump. You know,
it's still my, I think, record. I don't know why we should look back on that as like a regret when you're young and in this world with all the influences. It's like, how did you know?
As you get older, you realize that was just wrong because you're taking advantage of a slower person. Mm. So it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's one of those things that I will never do again because I didn't realize how bad
it was. How could you have realized?
The way I say it, when I say a slower person, I want to put it out there. It wasn't like she was slobbering all over the place as we were messing around. It's just something that always sticks with me whenever I hear that song. Like, you know, that's the virginity song.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the next time? That had to be much better.
The next time?
Well,
that one cost me money.
So it was much better.
Yeah, it was much better. Yeah. That was professional.
Yeah.
Really?
No.
Oh.
But I was a late bloomer, like right after that experience. That happened when I was early teens. But I was, like I said, in the system. So I really didn't have the opportunity most kids had on the street and stuff. So I had to wait till I was after 18 when I got my first apartment to really start hanging out with girls, dating and stuff like that.
You know, Billy, I my career has spanned well over 30 years as a direct care professional. And I started my career working with developmentally disabled students in a classroom as a teacher's aide. And then I went into group home care. I was a group home staff for nearly 20 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was at the Elmcrest Children's Center in Syracuse, then was at the Walker School in Needham. My experience as a staff member, I mean, I was working with foster kids. Were you a foster kid?
Yeah. I was foster home and then group homes. They bounced me back and forth.
You know, and part of my therapy today revolves around some of the really challenging life experience that at the time as a staff member, it's like, let's get in the van. We're going to the park, you know, and I'd steer with my knee. Yeah, Waterman's crazy. Honest to God, at Walker School, I stole this glass ashtray from a bar and I had my little proto pipe, my little weed pipe that I had in the glass thing. And I had these three foster kids that were in the group home. It was a residential program, you know, beautiful house.
RTF. Really,
but it was crazy. I mean, it was really, looking back on it, like out of control. So we're in the parking lot of this mall and I got these three young guys. Then we got money to go buy Christmas gifts. Did you get like checks and stuff like that? Like, okay, you guys, here's some.
I got allowances.
Buy sneakers and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe a video game. I was
your social security that kept you in the program.
Oh my God. And I'm like, you know, my dad used to take us out and do donuts in the mall parking lot whenever it was icy. And we were just flipping around doing excellent donuts. And I was really being careful. But out from underneath the seat slid that glass.
Oh, no.
And they were like, ooh. And I will tell you, they were the kids were saying, we don't snitch. We're not going to tell you. But, of course, I had to go right to the director. And they were like, you know, 12, 13 years old.
I was going to say, if you shared with them, they wouldn't have said anything.
But I regret that. Like, I'm like, here
really?
I am. I'm the guy who's in charge of trying to provide some sort of a stable, responsible experience. And I look at that as abuse. Like, what the hell was wrong with me? I was like 23 years old. And it's like, you're the guy that's taking care of us?
The funny thing is you had it in the group home van. That's where...
No,
the
it was
funny
my car, my Buick Century.
You okay, know? I thought, because you said, you know, going to the park, everyone get in a van. Yeah. I thought maybe you...
We were allowed to, with insurance, we, you know, personal automobiles. But did you have any staff members that stood out to you in a positive way or a particular negative way?
You know what?
There you was, don't mind going there.
Yeah,
right?
So the last group home I was in, it was because I spent most of my life in that system. Mm-hmm. This group home was made to transition your life from that life into being on your own. So they had the staff members live there with their family. And it was cool. It's called
That's progressive.
Yeah, it was called Harbor House. And these staff members were probably my favorite. I still talk to them to this day. If Dave and Wendy are listening, a big shout out to you. They really were a big influence on my life because I was one of those kids, which I'm sure you've seen, in the system where it's like, well, I've been given up. What's the sense of living? And I rebelled hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I rebelled so hard they put me in hospitals and stuff because they couldn't control me. Mm-hmm. And they thought that would be a punishment, putting me in some crazy hospital. But to me, it was a vacation. I was like, I have my own room. I could I have good chefs and stuff because they had good insurance paying for it. So they were private hospitals. And I was like, this is great. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. So this was a good one because they knew how to get through to me. They hooked me up with my first jobs. They got me into my first apartment.
What was your first job, your first apartment? What was that like?
My first official job was McDonald's.
I had that one.
Which was, that's hell. I don't care. Like, as a kid, you think it's cool you have a job, but looking back at it, you're like, was it really worth, like, all the pimples?
Yeah, because it afforded you to get an apartment and have girls over.
Well, I mean, the state paid for my first apartment, so that, I mean, it was a transitional thing, but my first legit job, other than McDonald's, which I consider my first career move, was Holiday Inns. I cooked for the Samuel Lounges. And through high school, I went through culinary art school. So I learned how to be a chef.
Wow.
So I was cooking for, you know, big hotels and all the big events.
You didn't go to CEAA and CIA?
No, it was Brook and Votek through Albany High School.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you're a good cook.
I can be.
That explains so much. I literally texted you the other day, and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, making banana pancakes. And then, like, the time before that, you're like, every time I'm like, what are you doing? Cooking. Like, okay.
I cook for myself.
You're very domesticated.
I quit being a cook and trying to be a chef when I moved to California. because upstate New York, as you know, it's more of a simple life.
Mm-hmm.
So people appreciate the love and stuff you put into something. Out here, it doesn't matter how hard you work on something. There's always going to be those snobs that are not happy with what you do. Mm-hmm. So I was just tired of it.
Did you try it out here, or did you not even go for
it? I tried it out here, and it was like, it doesn't matter how hard you work on something, somebody's going to return a dish and not care because they're, you know, it's a lot
of
people.
They're entitled, yeah.
They have a lot of money out here. Let's just put it like that.
Oh, my God, yes.
So it's like they just feel like it has to taste like the way their mom made it or something.
Oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
You know, I just hate it when people ask dumb questions like, so what's a rare steak? And it's like, really?
It's a Kobe third generation cow that was in the Hiroshima nuclear.
Exactly.
That's a rare.
When they return something like this, rare steak isn't brown in the middle. It's like, it's rare. That's what it's supposed to be.
I it's tough, man, because L.A., I'm out here 20-something years, bro. And how long have you been out here?
I've been out since 2002.
Oh, you're here a cool minute.
Yeah.
Do you like the language I'm using?
Yeah,
bro,
you're
cool
so
minute.
Hip right
I'm bonding
now,
with Billy Bats.
I'm sorry, we're from upstate New York.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah, I know, right?
Christ, man, you know, it's rocking out here. Real quick on an upstate thing, going back, do you go back and visit Wendy and Dave or anything like that?
I go back every year in August, my birthday month, and I do a little home tour up there.
Isn't the radio so different when you get out there?
It is. Like, the cat. That's what I'm used to, the cat.
Cat.
FM, rock and roll. There's a whole different sort of Canadian-esque energy back there.
It is. Aww. And then 106.5, The Edge, that's a radio station that used to play my band.
Oh, nice.
I used to play Edgefest up there, yes.
And then it's Sunday at the fairgrounds. We've got Demolition Derby coming up. There's two for ones over at Chatsy's tonight.
Oh,
at the Times Union Center.
I hate radio people. Oh, my God.
A homeboy here at Y-Tune Shuffle.
That's great.
Wow.
Well, what was your first, can we talk about your first apartment? What was that like? Was it like a little studio or was it pretty cool? Like,
it was.
It had a kitchen.
So it had a kitchen.
Well, mine does not. My little studio apartment does not have a full. It has literally
Dear
a hot plate.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you pull out the camping gear to cook?
I do. I grill in the bathroom.
She multitasks. She showers and cooks at the same time.
Bachelor apartment.
Just don't mix up the barbecue sauce with the soap. That's all.
Maybe I should. Get interesting.
Oh, my God. Maggie's sounding tasty all of a sudden.
Oh, here we go again. Every guest. Go on, please. The apartment, please.
Oh, I thought I was original. So the apartment was cool. I mean, it was through the state, so I had this roommate who was freaking nuts. He was kind of like your guy outside of your place, a homeless guy. Like,
yes.
I swear it was nuts. But it was cool because I was still playing drums that time, so I got to drive my neighbors crazy because I had my drum kit set up in my living room, so I'm jamming out all the time. Mm-hmm. It was...
What was your roommate's name? Do you remember?
I don't remember. He was just too nuts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lock it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes I fell asleep on a couch and I wake up and I was like, I'm lucky I'm still alive. Why did I pass out here instead of locking myself in my room? Like, it was nuts.
He would never he'd be like creeping over you, just staring at you when you wake up?
No, no. One time he was trying to find his inhaler, but that was creepy.
You're like...
Somehow I get it. But it's like, you know, these subtle...
Yeah.
He lived with kind of a psycho roommate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you played drums and...
Yeah, I played drums and it was fun because that was my first real time to like actually talk to girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so many fails through that because I never had that experience of like...
You're a typical dude.
Of kicking it to girls. Like, well, dudes usually like I said, through high school and stuff or through middle school, get that opportunity. I didn't. So it was like I was just thrown to the wolves. And it was like if I saw a girl, I'm like, do you know what time it is? And I play the drums. You should come over to my place. And where are you going? You know, like that.
Yeah. I think that's more the norm. I mean, I don't know. It's like we got to get through that stuff. Yeah.
And then I got a second place through the system and eventually got kicked out of there right when the band split up. And that's when I was like, I'm moving to California. I have an uncle out here. And I got kicked out of there because I got seasoned with hanging out with people and had a good set of friends in Catskill, New York, had a set girlfriend and stuff, and the neighbors got upset because I was partying too much.
In Catskill.
And what,
your
quiet
uncle?
Little town, the city boy moved in, and I had party lights literally on my ceiling. It was party and you know those big tubs you buy from Walmart and Kmart to put things in storage, like big Rubbermaid tubs.
Yep.
I always had two of those laid out on a floor, and at night we'd put ice in them, and they were filled with drinks every night.
I grew up with you. Yeah. You're just another version of the guys that I hung out with. Yeah. That's great.
Every single night. And then eventually it got out of control to every night partying, and my friends would climb out the fire escape and then urinate off of that. And then it got caught on camera a few times, and the neighbors got, you know, so they're like, yeah, you got to go. And
they were just jealous.
So I was like, I'm going to the West Coast.
To stay with Uncle...
To stay with my Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill.
Yeah, I slept on his couch for
your
a while.
Your namesake? Are you named after Bill?
Well, there's a few Bills in my family, so I really don't know who I'm named after.
Okay.
But it was a fun time, and I moved out here and worked at, where was my first? Subway was my first job out here, and then continued comedy.
Did you drive out here?
I did, with one of my uncles, and I drove a U-Haul.
Nice.
Which was fun because I never had the road experience. I worked the road back east, but I never had the real cross-country road thing.
Amazing.
And me and my uncle both love metal, but two different people, you know. So it was fun, you know. We'd alternate turns driving in the real windy areas. I learned how a U-Haul could be a sail.
Oh, yeah, man. That's I've driven across
going
a bunch
the
of times. Yeah, I got a Scion XB. It's a box and that sort of. Oh, my God. Windy. So you've been getting around.
You could say that.
Yeah, I did. I said it.
The way you make it sound is so creepy. So you've been getting around, huh?
Getting around there, really. Really goes places.
Stop rubbing your nipples.
That really just happened.
Yeah.
So song number two.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, yes. Okay. It has an intro.
I can't believe I'm letting you do this to me.
Ooh. Some underground club.
I got butterflies in my stomach. Oh, that's a nice little transition right there, headbanger.
Static X.
Is that who this is?
Yep. The song's called Love Dump.
Oh, man.
A love dump.
This is it.
It sounds like a very famous YouTube video.
That is, wow. How did you come across this music, this group?
Well, I'm a hardcore person. Like, that's just me. Like,
He's wearing a Korn t-shirt today, by the way.
True, yeah.
Which I'm going to see Korn and Stone Sour pretty soon. I'm so stoked.
I bet. Where are you going to see them?
The Forum.
In
June, I believe.
Nice.
The Stone Sour's playing with Korn, an opening for them.
And this is hardcore. What's the name of this group again?
This is Static X. This song's called Love Dump. Didn't even get to the singing part yet. This is the best part.
All right,
hold on. Let's hear it.
Give it its due.
It's just a long intro to this song.
That's fine.
This is a radio DJ's dream. A minute intro, I'm going to talk all the way up the ramp and tell you something that's really not that important.
I've been drinking coffee all morning. I had to take a bathroom break. Yes.
Here they go, right?
Yes. The beginning of it.
I can see this as a road trip song.
Love dump! Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
this is cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
And this is where my brain conjures up, like, my love dump means, and then I would just, you know, I'm trying to figure, like, what was the inspiration? Do you have any idea?
Well, there's a few reasons why I use this song. Actually, this is their love song. That's how they open it up. When they're live, they go, this is our love song. They're in that intro where the girl's like, I can't believe you're doing this to me. Like that whole beginning of that song, that whole intro, they use it for people to make noise. Like they have people repeat things and stuff, and it's cool. But yeah, this song, I use it for a few things. First of all, it's my pre-show song when I'm about to do comedy.
Cool. Very cool.
This is everyone has rituals they do before going on stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some people meditate. Some people pace around. Like if you go to a comedy show, you'll notice comics in the back of the room doing different things. In a green room, I like sitting down if I'm on the road or doing a big show. and listening to this song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'll run around a green room and I'll just get all my anxiety out and do that. So I love this song for that. This is also a song I use to get out all my aggression if I'm upset about something.
Uh-huh.
You know, either someone breaks up with me or there's, you know, something at work that happens that really upsets me, or my roommate upsets me, and I could just use this to throw things around, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's
I mean,
great.
Even if either literally or just internally throw things around.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
And then this is also a bedroom song for me.
Before you go to bed?
No. This is one of my sex songs. Like, I like messing around to hardcore music like this. I think it's sexy.
That's
so sexy. Red Shoe Diaries-ish right there. Like, you know, everyone wants to mess around to Marvin Gaye and all that stuff. Like, I like hardcore thumping beats. You know, that's
we
got to
make a short film, dude.
Yeah,
we
got to
make a short film.
Yeah.
No, like, think about it. Like, everyone wants to do slow jams and stuff like that and make love and have sex to that. No. Like, you know, the whole
I don't
point.
Make love. I make anger.
Exactly. It's not even making anger. It's like, you know, if you want to be creative in bed, you need something hard in like in the background
yes,
and stuff.
But
can
you
drive that out of you?
If I'm in the I'm sort of now taking a sex like, posture here.
I like how your hands are so far apart. Like
my hands are apart.
Butt cheeks are that big.
They gotta be. They gotta be. But I'm, you know, I have no staying power. You know what I mean? It's like I have to be very sort of zen. Like if I was knocking it out with this, left up, I'd be done in like a second.
Wait.
We're finished. Turn it down.
No, as you're doing that, can you continue playing the song as he's
crank
doing
it
that?
Out, crank it
wait, and keep on doing that.
Oh baby, come on, baby. Oh God, here we go. Here we go, baby. Come on now. Okay, turn it down. Okay, that's it. See, that's all. That was horrible. I'm glad there's no visuals. Thank you,
no,
Billy Batts, for bringing out my dark side.
Everybody out there, guarantee, has a visual right now of you.
I
and by the
so.
Way, his hands were out so far, it was like he was holding the Nutty Professor. Like, that's how big they were.
It was a single bed bedpost, man. I just, that was orgasmic.
So where,
I know.
Did, you hear, where did you hear this for the first
Would
time?
Would you like a cigarette?
Right.
I vape.
Oh, where did you hear this for the first time?
When Static X first came out, it was I mean, they're a hot group to me, and just listen to this. They are.
Yeah, they are.
They are. I mean, the guy has long hair straight up,
cool.
And then his beard just as long, straight down, sometimes braided. You know, I mean, the guy looks crazy. Wayne Static.
Wayne Static?
Yeah.
Where are they from?
I don't know, but it's Rob Zombie's brother.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. There's a connection. Neat.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's cool. Like, this is back in the day of CDs. So it's just messing around, listening to different groups and stuff. And I was like, this guy's really cool. And they have other good songs like Push It and another song called I'm With Stupid. And
were you in New York when you were listening to this a lot? Or was this more of
yeah,
a...
Okay. Yeah. I mean, when I got into hardcore, Metallica was the breaking point, like most people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started listening to Slipknot and then things like Rammstein and
oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
Du hast mich.
Yeah,
okay.
Which stands for You Hate Me. So I love messing around with that in the bedroom as well. But
well, now we know, ladies.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
Call
a romantic. I am a romantic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you want to get your anger issues out in a sexual way, call Billy Batts.
Isn't that what everyone does, though, in L.A.?
Get their anger issues out in
during
sexual
sex.
Ways?
Yeah, I think so.
I think most women get their daddy issues out in sexual ways in L.A.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how acting career started.
Casting couches. So,
nice.
You heard this a lot in New York.
Lately, it's just been a jam of mine. Like, I'll go through different phases of different songs I use as pre-pump-up music and stuff like that. No pun intended, but
this is a multifaceted jammy jam.
This is one of those jams that I could relate to a bunch of different things.
Do you have like? Would your friends listen? Would they come over? Bring me to your apartment. Was this a CD that you would put on and like hang out and drink your beers out of that big tub and put on?
Actually, back then it was more of a hip hop phase. You know, I was still in a young phase where I didn't know in my life what type of music I really liked and what type of music I didn't like. I still like old school hip hop, the 90s stuff, like the music that had a point to it, had a good beat to it, danceable. Mm-hmm. I hate the new hip hop these days, which is all monotone, sounds like they're sucking out of a helium balloon and just
yeah, it's
talking.
Saturated. Aww. Did you get into the Ghetto Boys? My mind's playing tricks on me.
Yeah. I like that.
That to me is creme de la creme.
This whole thing like Drake and Nicki Minaj and stuff, I'm not into that. Like,
what?
No, I'm not. I love hardcore music. That's my thing. And it's hard to find bands like Static X, you know, the older hardcore bands these days. There's a few good ones, but I just love that genre of music, like Static X.
Mm-hmm. My sister was really into Korn and that like heavy metal stuff. Yeah. In high school, it was really funny because I was such a musical kid. Like I was singing Rent, like the entire soundtrack of Rent, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey. Like I could not get enough. And she was like, Korn.
Were you like, in theater?
In our bedrooms. It was. I can't even imagine what my parents were experiencing. This
duality.
My mom still to this day, she calls us, I'm her sun, and my sister is her moon. And so, like, everything dark is related to Felicia, and everything light is related to Maggie. And so we kind of are her.
I'm glad you ended it with moon, because at first when you said, you are her sun, I was like, wait, you're supposed to be a dude?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I transitioned amazing.
That's the segment we call Finish the Sentence.
So nice. I get it. I never got the metal stuff, but then in St. Louis, they do a Point Fest. It's like a radio station concert. And so went with my ex-husband, and I was like, yeah, okay, this is cool. I get it. There's something really fun about going to a concert and just being sweaty and knowing that everyone's sweaty. I don't care. Like, I got right in the mosh. I think it was a Social D show, and just elbows up and running around. And it was the sweatiest I had ever been in my whole life. And even falling, but everyone's so cool. They're like, oh, a chick wants to dance. This is awesome. And so they pull you right back up anytime. They're just like, yeah, protect and punch, but protect you and punch you. Like, it was fun.
Late mid-90s mm-hmm. in Boston, I was into a pretty hardcore scene. There was a band called Black and Gray. Johnny Rely was the lead singer, and it was the scene in Boston was just really pumping. And these guys were all South Boston people, and I'm not tough, and I'm kind of afraid of fighting. I've always been, but it's like you get drawn into this physical experience. I mean, I got my pummeled, you know. In those, did your shows when you were in a band? Did it get to that level?
You know. I got to say that moshing these days is not what it used to be. Before, it used to be like kind of like an art, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was called – the moshing was slam dancing, but it wasn't – it was more of everyone having a good time.
Yeah.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was a circle pit, everyone running around.
Well, that's what
circle.
It was. It was fun.
Yeah. It was fun. Now it's like everyone's planning on going to the event, and they go in a mosh pit, and it's just all about let's see how badly I could hurt somebody. And it's like – it's no longer what it used to be. People are taking it the wrong way. And so
I hate those guys on the edge that don't want to participate. They just want to shove you.
Yeah, it's body bumps.
They're the scary ones. Don't touch me.
They're like the prison fighters. You know, like they're the ones in a jail yard that, you know, as soon as they see a fight, they're just going to push you right back in the middle of it.
That's what happens with most stuff. It's kind of like we're all there kind of bumping into each other, getting our aggression out, and then somebody's got to throw a punch, you know, or somebody's got to bring a blade or something.
Ugh. Yeah. Has that happened?
Well, I bring a blade. No.
I tuck mine under my tongue. I don't know about you.
Sweet. No. Shoe. Mine's in my shoe. Straight razor.
No wonder you don't fly, David.
I don't do a lot of things anymore. I'm kidding. As is Billy Batts with Maggie Mayfield. We're all here. Y-Tune Shuffle.
Oh, David Earl Waterman. I feel like we needed to say your name.
Yeah, thank you.
Next song? Nice.
This next song is more of a depressing song, just to warn you, but it's something that speaks to me a lot.
Number three.
Let's hit it, baby. It's kind of dark and depressing.
I'm letting it pour over us right now.
It sounds like Johnny Cash.
What?
Like late Johnny Cash? The Hurt?
Bury all your secrets in my skin. Come away with the innocence and leave me with my sins.
Good lyrics.
The air around me still feels like a cage. Love's just a camouflage for what resembles rage again.
Who is it?
This is Slipknot.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
This is Slipknot.
So if you love me, let me go. Run away before I know.
This seems more like a... what you would listen to if your heart got broken.
This actually speaks to me in many ways. This is a song maybe like 2 years ago it just started speaking to me, and it means a lot to me. I was in a crossroads in my life where I was very depressed. My father's no longer with us, so I was dealing with that for a few years. And just depressed over a lot of things, getting out of relationships and stuff. And then this song came along, and it helped me deal with all that. So no matter what, if there's a curveball thrown in my life, no matter which way, I turn on this song, I sing it, it helps me get through it. I sing it on karaoke, and later on in the song, it gets really heavy, and which is really cool. And it just helps me express everything out. This sounds dark, but this is actually a song I want played at my funeral.
Mm-mm.
You know, I mean,
yeah, it's cool.
Because if you think about the lyrics, I mean,
if you love me, let me go.
Yeah, if you love me, let me go. Later on in the song, it says, I only wish you weren't my friend so I could hurt you in the end. Things like that, because it's like when you lose somebody or something in your life, sometimes you wish that, where it's like, I wish I didn't care about this so much. You know, I wish I could hate this. So this way it's easier to let it go. It's one of the things that speak to me in the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this whole song to me, a lot of people hear it, they think, they get depressed right away or something like that. And it's like, to me, it's all about letting things go and listening to the story of the song and utilizing that.
Who introduced you to music? Who was like your
the
big
radio.
Brother? Really? No, I mean, like, everyone's kind of got this big brother that, you know, introduces them to, kind of opens their eyes into this world of music. Who was that for you?
This world right here, it was the last group home I was in for metal music. His name was Ben Julian. So if he's out there, big shout out, brother.
And you guys were in the group home together?
Yeah, we first met in a residential treatment facility. And then the last group home I was in, he was also there. So it was like I had already knew him coming into this. And it was like awesome. And he introduced me to this world before I was this little white kid trying to be as black as possible. And it wasn't working out for me. And, you know, I was walking around singing the Loonies. I got five on it. And people were looking at me like I was crazy.
Got five on it.
And so one day he's playing a CD of Silverchair, which is not as hard. It was more of a grunge band. And I got into it. I was like, this rocks. And he ended up trading me one CD for like all three of Silverchair CDs. And I was like, that's what got me hooked. And then eventually Marilyn Manson came out. Mm-hmm. And then he introduced me to that. And then Slipknot. And... From there on, I was a total rocker.
Did you spend a lot of time going to record stores together and picking out music?
Not together. Not together. We were friends, but not that close. But when I was in one group home, there was a used record store up street. And back in my day, we didn't have MP3s and stuff like that. We had what you call tapes and CDs and records. And the used record stores would let you pull out the record, CD, or tape, whichever one you wanted, and listen to it on headphones to make sure it worked right and stuff like that. So I'd spend a lot of time in those record stores.
Do you remember the name of the one you went to?
No, it was just a little mom and pop shop.
Yeah, but
it was
they're like, awesome. They're really cool.
Yeah, so you were able to listen to the music, and a lot of times they'd get upset at me because that was my escape. You know, the group homes would let you sign out for like, I don't know if you remember, for like an hour at a time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'd literally sit there without buying anything for like an hour, just pulling out different things. And the employees would be like, if you're not going to buy anything, you need to get out. And it's like, you know, don't tell me what to do. I'm going to sit here, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's
man. Tough.
Out of all the things you could have been doing, though, I mean,
that was my escape.
That's pretty positive stuff.
Yeah.
How did you learn how to play music?
There was a program called YAPMA, and it Youth Advancement Through Music and Art.
Cool.
And I started taking drumming classes through that. I started out with jazz, blues, Muddy Waters type thing.
Hmm.
And then eventually kept on practicing and built my way up.
Did you have one of those pads?
No, I had a full-on drum kit, and it drove everybody crazy.
Because you were awesome from day one, I'm sure.
I was born awesome. What are you talking about?
I played violin, and it wasn't until like a couple years ago my parents were like, "You were terrible." You know, thanks for the support.
The violin is amazing. I got to tell you that. Because like in a lot of the darker metal and stuff, violin plays an important part.
They do. They play the electric violin.
Yeah.
So
Devil cool. Went Down to Georgia. One of my there favorite you go. Songs.
Yeah. I actually saw him in concert.
I did too.
I met him.
At a stock car racetrack, I seen him. Yeah. Where'd you meet? You met him.
Yeah. I actually,
Charlie Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charlie Daniels. He was playing... the Green County Fair.
Nice. And the venues he plays are the best. Yeah. Yeah.
So this tour bus pulls up, and a girl I was dating at the time, her stepfather, this tells you how old school these towns are I grew up in, ran a shoe shop, or shoe repair shop.
Beautiful.
And it's still in business to this day. And, you know, that's what I love about small towns, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But across the street in a park, all of a sudden, Charlie Daniels' bus pulls up, and her mom's like, "Oh my God, I must have an autograph. I have to have an autograph." And I had just started dating this girl, so I'm like, this is my chance to rule over the family.
Good. Aww. Good boy.
And I knock on a door and stuff, and as far as I was concerned, there might have been the security guard who was ready to shoot me on the bus, you know, for protecting him. But he answered the door himself, him and his wife, and they're about to go for a walk through the park.
Wow.
And he's like, "Sure, you know," even, and I could tell that it was bothering him. Like, this was, you know, he was ready to go on his walk, and now he's like, "Great, now I have people knocking on the door." But he was cool. He signed the autograph. Then I went to go see him in concert at the fair.
Good for you.
And the special thing was my cousin, who lives out here in California City, out by Mojave and stuff, she was visiting from California. It was fun because she went with me, and it was like a bonding moment between me and my cousin and my aunt and stuff like that before I moved out here to California.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I was outside the Triangle Theater in Boston, and Willie Nelson's van, his bus, was pulled up, you know, and my dad, you know, was like, "Oh, I love country. We got to," you know, we kind of knocked, and we could kind of hear him in the back. And
did you smell the wacky tobacco?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And totally. And Willie, we could hear Willie ask the guy at the door. He said, "Are they farmers?" My dad, "No, just, thanks anyway." You know, it was like a respectful thing, but it's just like, you know, you were talking about how, you know, Charlie was kind of a little bit like, "Yeah, we're just, okay, I'll deal with this." But they, you know, what a life that must be for them to run up on it. That's cool, man.
And the funny thing is, his bus didn't say the Charlie Daniels Band or nothing on it. It was just regular maroonish red tour bus that pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, she knew. So I was like, you know, so who's the real stalker to know who's on that bus, you know?
Had you heard any of his music before? Or were you like, "I don't know who this guy is"?
Well, Devil Went Down to Georgia has always been big. So my dad was a big country music person. Actually, when we get to song 5, it's a country song, and that's because I had a foster mother who loved country and introduced me to country. So
I'm excited. I'm excited. Where are we at now? We're in 4.
Four.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You know what this is.
I do?
MC2, TC2, a third debut.
That sound.
Balled up in here.
Air horn, baby.
Talking about how lesbians making out and smoking while tied up and fight. Kick it. I love the hot lesbians, and dude, that's a fact. I'm checking out this bitch and
David's face.
I know they be nimble, and
the connections that are made on this show are uncanny.
Do you know this song, David?
No, but the words are speaking loud to me, man.
Those hot lesbians. This has been a very naughty show.
I'm an innocent
naughty
man.
But nice. Naughty but nice.
Naughty but nice, yes.
Who is this?
This is my friend right here.
Oh, this is okay.
It's an original.
That's awesome.
Indie.
No wonder I don't know it.
You guys feel like you need Q-tips yet?
No.
Can you shout your ears?
No, I'm down.
No, actually, this is a good friend of mine.
Who is it?
His name's Chad Ridgely. He's another comedian.
Hey, Chad.
Chad.
The Chad.
And he...
Was it the Chad? 2 points if you even know what that movie is from.
I have no idea.
What's up, Chad?
Was it the Chad? No, it was Tom Green and Charlie's Angels.
Oh.
Was it the Chad? And Drew See Barrymore that, goes, it was
You're asking about a
Chad.
Tom Green line. That's the hard part right there.
It's fine. It's only a formative movie for me. No big deal. So who's Chad? How do you know him? How'd you get this song? Did you meet him here?
Well, Chad, I met here in California, and he's a good friend of mine. He's also a comedian. this song is fun because he wrote this with his group Black Attack, and it's spelled B-L-A-A-K-A-T-T-A-A-C-K. So it's not Black Attack as in something. When people hear Black Attack right away, they go, you know, like a racist thing. And I'm like, no, if you look at the spelling, it's just a creative play of words. So he came out with this song with his group, him, my friend Stevie Coachella, and another one I do not speak of.
Coachella, so, cool name.
Yeah, so Stevie went back to his hometown. He was another karaoke host and a comedian with his wife and child, the racist child, back east. And then eventually I asked Chad, I said, hey, can we still do this song together? You know, I love this song so much. Can we do this together? And he goes, yeah. So
wait, you're on this track?
Not on the recording, but sometimes we'll do it live together. So the first time we ever did it live, we did it at a strip club. Out of all places.
Perfect.
Yeah. So
where was the strip club?
It was Crazy Girls in Hollywood.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was working at Crazy Girls. I used to be a strip club DJ for a while.
You lucky son of a gun.
No.
That's my dream job.
No.
Why no? Why no?
No, no, no.
Why
no? Okay. Because it seems fun, but you have no idea all the drama that happens with the girls, the high school stuff you have to deal with and all that. I mean, it's a pain and it's not as fun as it sounds.
All right, gentlemen. Coming to the stage is Bambi.
That's right. Pull out your singles here to keep a rise in your Levi's. This is Crystal.
God. Oh, I love you.
You sound so good.
Two for one, two for fun. Get her done in the back room right now. Yeah, that was me.
How long did you do that?
6 years of my life. And
I was probably there one night when you were there. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I really want that job. I've always wanted that job.
Really?
Go for it.
I can hook you up. So... Yeah, so it was funny, like, when I first approached Chad about it, he's like, yeah, let's do it, you know? And so I was working at Crazy Girls, and the thing is, the customers had no idea we were coming in, and neither did the girls. So all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, you know, not even the middle of the night, it's like halfway through the night that we opened, customers are at stage waiting for these girls to come out and dance. There's people getting lap dances in the back, and all of a sudden two dudes come out and do two songs. You know, we did that song and another song called Hot Boobies on Blondes, Brunettes, and Redheads. And all of a sudden they're like, you know, everyone's just looking around confused, and I could hear like the lap dances pause and the girls going, what's going on? Like, you know.
Yeah, I can't time this. I don't have the timer on.
How did people receive it? I mean, were they
It was cool afterwards, but at first they were shocked. Like, why are there dudes on a strip club stage? We're not getting it.
That's
you
awesome,
know?
Though. Yeah. Were you cool with the management, obviously? They let you do it?
They let us do it, and it was a fun time. And now Chad's at the point to where I asked him last night if I could air this, and he said, yeah. I mean, it was first aired on Playboy Radio, and he's got a lot of publicity off of this. He just wrote and produced a movie called Massacre on Aisle 32, I believe.
Massacre on Aisle 32. Oh, wicked.
Yeah, and it's, wicked. It's out on Redbox right now and Netflix and stuff, and it's doing really well, and... But whenever I'm on a road, you know, sometimes he'll let me do this as either opener or a closer, depending on the situation and the show. If the club has a lot of comics before me, the breakup, the monotony of all the stand-up, I'll open with the song. So this way people are back in it. And then,
good.
Yeah, I mean, if
I'm is it to, on is it on YouTube? Can we find the song on YouTube?
Yeah,
what's
yeah,
it called?
You can. It's called Hot Lesbians Making Out While Smoking Tied Up. Look up Black Attack, you'll find it. Or look up Chad Ridgely, and you'll find it.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
cool.
Original music.
I love
you know,
that.
This is great for the show, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I mean, thank him. It's my fun song, too. Like karaoke, you have no idea. Like when Chad comes in to hang out with me, we'll do the song karaoke clubs, and people go crazy.
Right.
And then you can find out which are the, you know, hardcore lesbians in the crowd because they look upset at us. But it's like...
Really?
But everyone else is... Well, not all the time, but every once
in a
while.
I guess I can understand that.
It's just, you know, when someone's at the bar drinking and all they hear is a lesbian and turn around and see two dudes up there singing about it instead of hearing the full song, you know, but... It's usually a club jumper when we walk in and people love it.
Club jumper.
There is something kind of cool about karaoke and learning new music because you don't know what kind of characters are going to go in there. That's actually how I learned about the Humpty Dance, through the Humpty Hump. I had never heard it before. I was in a karaoke joint and some guy did it and I was blown away at how cool it was.
Oh, the Humpty Hump.
The Humpty Hump.
I'll never forget it.
Actually, it was here in Orange County in Tustin at McClure's, it was called at the time. It's not that anymore, but...
Now you're learning how to dance like MC Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I heard Humpty in 89 in Poughkeepsie. I can't remember the name of the club. It was
Poughkeepsie,
a big club.
New York.
Poughkeepsie, New York. Yeah.
So great.
Love the Humpty Hump.
Do the Humpty Hump.
But you know, with music too, it's kind of like, you know, it's karaoke. You're a drummer.
Yeah.
You've been in bands. I assume you write lyrics, read music, whatever the case may be.
I'm still writing lyrics.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's awesome that that world is accessible. And it's kind of lame, I think, when people are possessive of it. Like, karaoke, that's not really music. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's my only access to music.
Yeah.
I don't have any talent.
Right.
I don't understand, but I love to sing. I love this.
Yeah.
I love to connect to it, you know, and it's bully for you, sir.
Well, I mean,
allowing that experience.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
as a professional musician and karaoke, that's great.
Think about it, like, music is therapeutic. I mean, it's the number one therapy to me for everybody, and that's why I love the concept of this show, and that's why I love karaoke, because it gives everyone an outlet and that opportunity to use the music to as what it's meant to be.
Is there a song that people do on karaoke that you can't stand?
Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Not without even batting an eye.
That and Wannabe by Spice Girls.
Oh.
Is it just because it's too much? They do it too all
Those
the time?
Those are like the go-to songs. And it's like, come on now. Like, there's so I have a catalog of over 400,000 songs. And everyone wants to go to Journey. Everyone wants to go to Foreigner. Everyone wants to go to Spice Girls. And it's like, dude, come on.
Has anyone picked a favorite where you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, every once in a while, like once or twice a month, I'll get that gem where someone picks something that no one's ever picked before. And I feel like paying them. I'm like, thank you. Thank you so much.
Like what was the last one?
Someone picked a Michael Jackson song that he did as a child that was like a B-side that randomly I had. You know, and it's like, I didn't think I'd have it. Then I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for this. You know?
Cool.
Yeah, that's
so
great. That's just great.
Something rare you never hear.
That's great.
But I want to go back to song 3 real quick. Is that cool?
Yeah, sure.
As far as that, I mean, one thing I want to talk about, another reason why that song's enough is Big To Me, the Slipknot song. Corey Taylor, talking about music, how it influences you. Corey Taylor, the lead singer of Slipknot and Stone Sour, is a huge idol of mine. That's the guy I want to be in this industry.
Mm.
As far as he's a good vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great writer. He's written books. And then on his book tours, if you ever go see him live, talk about his books, he's a great stand-up comic without even trying to be.
Oh, wow.
Which is huge. And he's acted. So to me, he's like the Jamie Foxx of the rock world.
That's cool.
Yeah. So like he is the person I look up to. So if...
Have you met him personally and told him this?
No. I mean, if I ever have the chance to meet him...
You should tweet him.
I've tried, and if I ever had the chance to meet him, I will probably look like a 13-year-old girl going to see NSYNC for the first time. Like, that would...
For the first 5 minutes, then you'd chill out.
Yeah, like, I would... Yeah, that's the one person in the world that I'd be starstruck over.
Cool.
Very cool. So, and we're right next door to the building they're signed to, so it's like, you know...
You did say that as we walked in, yeah.
Yeah. I was looking around. I was like, is anyone here? Is Corey around?
Saturday, 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Sorry to disappoint.
Well, you never know their recording schedule or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
well, there you go. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. They never do weird things all the time. Last week they had a big video. They were doing some music video.
That's right. We came
last
in.
Week, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was Slipknot?
No.
Oh, you said they, and I'm in the middle of talking about Corey Taylor. I'm like, I'm
that was
jealous
a tease.
You saw it.
That was a Y-Tunes tease.
Sorry. I'm a good tease.
Just in general, we never know what we might run into around here.
If you're a good tease, why don't we play that Static X song again and show me what kind of tease you are? Hey-o!
Wow, this is really, you know, let me light the incense. We're bringing the lights down.
Amazing.
Turn off the lights. In light of candle.
So I'm going to move on to song number 5, if that's
I don't want it to end. I don't want it. I want to stay in upstate New York for a few more minutes. Number 5, Billy Bats, Y-Tune
this
Shuffle.
This is the country song.
Oh, yay!
Maggie's a country girl.
Maggie's twerking right now.
Oh, this is Maggie's business right here. Maggie was in country radio.
This is like the cheesiest country song.
It is.
Well, I love it. But we love the cheese.
You can tell my arms go back to the farm. You can tell my feet to hit the floor.
Go ahead, rocker.
Tell my fingertips they won't be reached out, Maggie, no more.
Wow. There's got to be a story behind why this made your 5.
Well, you talked a little bit about one of your foster moms.
Yeah. So I was a total rebel growing up in the system. I hated the system. I was like, you know, like I said, I'm sure you ran into those kids where it's like, you know, you don't really understand what's going on in life and why you're in that situation. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm like, you know, my mom and dad don't have me, and for some reason they don't want me. So, mm-hmm. you know, I was a total troublemaker. And there were two times in my life where people were able to control me. The foster home, the group home I said I was in, and then his foster mother, she was the only person I was going to allow to adopt me.
Is that a thing? You have to allow the
kids get a say in a lot of this.
Well, no,
stuff.
They don't. They don't really get a say, but it's like, you know, talking to my parents, it was like, you know, I still had contact with my parents, even though I was raised in the state and stuff. I talked to them. I said, hey, listen, if anyone's going to take care of me for the rest of my life and you guys can't have me, why don't you sign a paperwork, let her take me, and she'll still allow you guys to talk to me. This way I'm not in group homes and stuff, and I really, really like this woman. But then she ended up getting cancer, and she's no longer with us, unfortunately. But she,
what was her name?
Her name was Helen. But she introduced me to country music, and not just any country music. I mean, she was Boxcar Willie, nice. Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, and all that stuff. And then my first country album she ever got me was Billy Ray Cyrus. And to this day, in honor of her, I sing that on karaoke and Some Gave All by Billy Ray Cyrus. Yeah, so that's a song that sticks with me because of her.
But that's about as country as you go.
No, I mean, I'll sing some country songs.
Okay.
Yeah, like Brooks and Dunn and stuff like that.
Nice.
That's cool. I don't know why I'm having a sentimental moment. I mean, because it is sentimental. But when somebody thinks about another person and the gift that they want to share with you is a music gift, you know, I'm thinking of you and I want you to have this.
Yeah.
You know, I've never given that particular experience, you know.
Would you guys, like, spend time, maybe I'm just romanticizing this, but you and Helen, would you spend time in the kitchen, like, listening to this as she'd make dinner for you? And
it was mostly car stuff. Like, when we were in a car, you know, it was like that was the time to listen to music together. Because I was still a young kid.
Yeah.
So it's like
14, 15 young? What?
I believe a little younger. Wow. You know, I was just in middle school, and it was that time when I was younger, and it was in the country. So it wasn't like, you know, she lived very upstate New York in the country areas and Bethlehem, New York, outside of Ravenna.
Sure, yeah.
It was a lot of countryside. So during the day, there was no time to listen to music with whoever you lived with because you're a kid. You're out playing with your friends. You know, people talk about when you're young playing stickball. We still did that because it's the country, you know. Yeah. And, you know, we had pets and stuff. So it was outside playing. But when we were in a car together, that's when we shared a music experience.
Yeah. You remember what kind of car Helen drove?
Yeah, it was an old school station wagon.
Yeah,
well, like the Woody on the side, you know, and all that. It was like
Oldsmobile or something.
Like the old school National Lampoon's, you know, type of car. You know?
Had that back seat where you could look out the back window.
Exactly.
And,
this is back in, well, now I'm putting my age out there. This is back in the age where gas was $1 a gallon.
I remember
that. Yeah. And we were all flipping out. Yeah.
So, what was your guys' first album? That's what I want to know.
My very first album was The Beatles Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. My stepmother got it for me.
What was your first album, Maggie?
My first tape, cassette tape, was the Beach Boys' Greatest Hits. I love that tape. But then my first CD was, no doubt, Tragic Kingdom.
You were destined to move to California.
Mm-hmm.
Beach Boys and No Doubt. Orange County and then All About the Beach. Destined to move here.
I did. I was.
Wow.
Now that we've come full circle, we've done your Fave Five. What's a guilty pleasure? Like, if your friends knew that you were listening to your guilty pleasure artist, they would be like, what?
Well, okay. So my guilty pleasure is the New Kids on the Block.
Yeah!
Oh, wow. Guilty is charged.
Yes.
That's been the best guilty pleasure thus far.
And here's the reason why. Growing up in my first foster home, still trying to hunt these people down just because I want to check in with them because they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They took care of me very well, but they had my little foster sister, Katie, was a huge New Kids fan, and it drove me freaking nuts growing up.
Yeah.
And then I ended up fracturing my femur bone, so I was stuck in this body cast at home, and I had to sleep on New Kids' sheets.
With a broken femur.
And she would play around me with, I mean, back then they had the fake stage with the dolls and everything. And she played with them. And they had the cartoon. So I was stuck in, like, a basement room that was the play area, you know, the TV was there. So during the day, my foster brother would come in and play Nintendo. That was cool to watch. But when it was her turn to watch TV, it was the new kids' cartoons. It was this. It was that.
Yeah.
You're stuck.
Just drove me nuts. And now as I got older, I started listening to them. And it's like through karaoke and stuff. So every once in a while, I'll be jamming out the Hangin' Tough or Cover Girl or
something.
Yeah,
that's
what
happens.
Yeah, that's
cool. You know, it's like, and it's one of those things that stick to you because it's
the
it's
right
a song
stuff.
That, but it's a story of your life, you know? It's
exactly,
something
exactly.
So it's like you appreciate that now as an adult listening to it because it takes you back to that time where it was like, person was really cool, you know, growing up. And
that's great.
So, yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. That's your guilty pleasure.
Katie. That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Do you have a poetic lyric that comes to mind, like the words that just go together so well? Could be one of your five, could be any song. Like mine is, you know, going down party time. My friends are going to be there too. Highway to Hell, AC/DC.
It had to be something off of Snuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you love me, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
My heart is too dark to care. You know, it's
there
just,
you go.
Yeah. So it's.
Is it time?
Mm-hmm.
This is time. My favorite part of the show.
Too much fun here.
We're not done with you yet, Billy Batts.
Oh,
and you will be back when we're national. think very hard, and in your own definition of concert, what was your very first concert, and what do you remember about that?
The Coasters.
Oh, my God.
What is that?
Fee, fee, fi, fi, fo, fo, fum. I smell
Charlie
smoke
Brown.
In the auditorium. Charlie Brown.
Brown.
Wow.
He's
the
clown.
How did you get to see the Coasters?
There was another state fair. No, but it was I consider it my very first concert because it was with my father. And I was on a visitation with him, and it was my very first autograph, too.
Sweet.
And it's a thing that it really stuck out to me. And it wasn't like a CD autograph or a tape autograph or even a headshot autograph. I was wearing a cheesy, remember back in the day, the alligator shirts?
Izod.
Yeah. The alligator on a corner, and it looked really cheesy. I was wearing one of those, and I took the shirt off my back and made the band sign that.
Wow.
And I wish I could still find it somewhere.
Hell yeah.
Did you and your dad spend time at the fair beforehand, or did you just go right?
Yeah. No, we went. We spent the whole day together and stuff, and it was something special because that was my dad's generation, and he was jamming out to it, and because he loved oldies and stuff, and I got a big record collection off him when I was younger, I knew the songs, you know, and it was just fun to share that moment with him.
It's amazing, first concert.
Well, Billy Batts, this has been really great.
Really great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I feel closer to you now.
I feel honored to share this moment with you guys. This got real today.
Well done, man.
This is the part where you get to share your corner of the internet, promote whatever it is that you've got going on.
Well, I always have shows going on. If you're in a Southern California area, in the L.A. area, come out to the Van Nuys Comedy Club every Wednesday night at the Springbok in Van Nuys, California. The Springbok is located 16153 Victory Boulevard in Van Nuys, and the show is every Wednesday, 9 p.m., free admission. And if you want to see where I am performing next, look me up on Facebook, Billy Batts, B-A-T-Z.
You know, there's a line from the Bad News Bears where they're asking Kelly Leak, it's Bad News Bears 2, and Kelly Leak's going to drive the van. And he's, are you sure you can drive this? And Kelly Leak leans back and goes, of course I can drive. I'm from Van Nuys.
Well, that's the home of, they teach their kids how to steal cars there, so of course they could drive.
That's where we at. Billy Batts.